Remember what I say, you can cry, 'cause your tears are gonna dry. I wouldn't lie, cross my heart and hope to die.
Life Rhythms radio show starts right now. Yes. Hey, guys. Welcome to Life Rhythms. I am your host, DJ producer Ryan Sky. I've got a very special guest with me today. Griffin is going to be joining us. I've got Griffin and I've got my co-host and my manager, Scott Waldman. So Life Rhythms, first of all, what is it? Life Rhythms is a radio show that revolves around my personal growth journey. You see, as a songwriter and music producer, I spend a lot of my time observing the world around me, looking inward, trying to make sense of it all. I've been doing it in song form, and now I'm doing it with my radio show. The way it works is each episode we feature one topic around personal growth, one song, one guest. The topic of today's episode is going to be the human condition. And the reason why I chose this topic is because we've got Griffin on the show and we're going to be featuring his record, Cry. And when you look at the lyrics of Cry, the singer talks about, "Then you meet your first love just to learn a lesson. Guess it's kind of fun in a funny way. Then it gets deeper. You say, I'll never leave you till you get scared and you run away." I think we can all relate to this experience of falling in love, of wanting it and maybe running away from it, of making mistakes. And when I think about this, I think about the human condition, which is basically the experience of being alive, being born, growth. We've got regrets. We've got hopes for the future. Maybe we've got doubts of decisions we've made or where we're at, where we're going, all of these sorts of things. It's deeply tied into these lyrics. And I got a perfect guest today with Griffin because, to quote This Song Is Sick, the blog, they say that this about Griffin, that truthfully, few artists have mastered the gift of being able to simultaneously make us want to dance, cry, and belt the lyrics at the top of our lungs, quite like Griffin has. And I second that notion. Griffin has managed to pour his heart out into his music. If you listen to the music, there's so much in there about the experience of being alive and being human. I think he'd be a great guest to have on the show today to talk about this. We are going to take a short break. And when we get back, I've got Griffin joining me and my manager and co-host Scott Waldman. We're going to be featuring the single Cry, talking about, we're going to really pull the curtain back behind Griffin's process of creating music, because I noticed that he uses music to express himself, maybe in a way that feels more natural and is more effective than just talking outside of that. And that whole process of using the medium of music to kind of like figure out what's going on in life and communicate that, something I want to explore. And even too, I've noticed that when I mention Griffin's name to people, their faces light up. And there is a real connection that he has forged with his fans. People really are gravitated to the music. It resonates with them. So I'm curious to have him on the show, ask him questions about the human experience, the human condition, see what his experience has been like growing up and with relationships and with life and kind of like what that process has been like. All of that we're going to get into when we get right back after this short break.
Hope you know that I will be here with my shoulder by your side. So cry, you can leave it all behind tonight.
Hey guys, so excited for today's episode. I've got a very special guest with me today. Griffin is in the house. Hey Griffin, got you virtually streaming in today.
Yeah, it's good to be here, man. How you doing?
Doing great. You know, so hot in LA right now. The weather's crazy.
It's insane. Cooking over here in Venice. It like rarely happens.
And I also got my co-host with me today, Scott Waldman. Hey, Scott.
Heart's beating wild.
He always opens with a lyric of our guest song. We're featuring Griffin's track, Cry. And Cry features vocals by John Martin. I was happy to see John Martin on the track. He's, you know, Swedish singer-songwriter. He's one of, if not the most famous voice inside of EDM. He's a voice behind some of three of the biggest tracks in EDM history: Save the World, Don't You Worry, Child, and Reload. John's on this record with you, Griffin. I think it's a really nice match. How did that collaboration come about?
Yeah, that basically came about. I mean, basically, like you referenced with John Martin, those big songs, like that was a huge part, is what made me fall in love with dance music to begin with when I first heard those records. His voice and the lyrics and this, the story he told, the emotional quality of his like artistry, I was so pulled to it back when those songs were released. And we had been kind of emailing back and forth over a while, and finally had this time period in February earlier this year when our schedules overlapped and they were out here writing in LA, and we decided that we booked like two sessions together just to kind of vibe and hang out. And after the second session, we like were starting to really put together Cry, and then we booked like three more days together and like spent the whole week together like finishing this record. Super cool experience. He's such a nice guy, and he's so talented.
Yeah, it's an awesome collaboration. You debuted it to 75,000 viewers during the virtual Digital Mirage Music Festival back in April. And for our listeners, the Digital Mirage Festival, it's run by YouTube channels Proximity, Trap Nation, and Brownies and Lemonade. And before the debut, you told fans that there was a new era coming. You had a cryptic tweet that you put out about this new era of your music. And then on July 28th, you tweeted that you were working on a track with the intention of making a timeless dance record. Do you feel like with Cry that you were able to achieve that timeless element you were looking for?
I'm always like weird talking about my own music like that, but I am really proud of the record. Like, who knows like about that moniker? I would love that to be the case, but who knows? But
were you creatively fulfilled?
I was creatively fulfilled for sure. Like, I was really proud of the record that we wrote and the production on it. I'm really proud of it. It's just very much in my style and whatnot. And yeah, it's something that I feel like over the course of my entire life, like I always look back on this record with a lot of positive feelings and a lot of like accomplishment as an artist. So
it's there's a lot in this record that to be proud of. It's something that you can look back on and kind of have the like we cannot predict how people are going to receive the record, but in terms of like your intentions behind it, I could see that right away when I listened to it. EDM.com, they said Cry is a scintillating future pop record that tugs at the heartstrings through Martin's poignant vocal effort. I can second that. There's definitely that emotional element to it. And also I loved the mix and the master of it. The track was mastered by Grammy nominated mastering engineer Michelle Mancini, who also did Marshmello's Happier, Portugal the Man's Feel It Still, Cheat Codes Stay With You, who we had Cheat Codes on a couple weeks ago. It's a good team behind the record.
Yeah, absolutely. That's like whenever I'm doing sessions and working with artists, like I'm always excited for sure to go to the studio because it's always a fun experience. But with John, like going back to like what we were talking about with his previous records and like what made me really fall in love with dance music was like a lot of his records and his voice. So yeah. To finally like, I don't know, like 5-6 years later, I guess, after those records came out, maybe even longer, like to kind of have the opportunity to work with him, I was like, so I couldn't even sleep the night before. I was like so amped for the next day, like meeting with him. And
I can imagine.
Yeah.
He's got one of those voices that just, at least for me, I mean, those records that came out, it was like what, like the 2010s, 13s, that kind of era. And
yeah, exactly.
Iconic. It was like this iconic moment in EDM. And when I think about those songs, like it brings back memories of me of like, you know, being in Cancun with friends and Don't You Worry Child comes on, and just like wherever you were at in the world, wherever you were going through, if you're a fan of dance music, the songs that John has been part of has become, you know, it's becomes like a part of you and brings back these memories. And Griffin, I have to say your music is kind of going in that direction as well. I remember I first found out about you with your Whitney remix when you put out the,
nice.
I learned from the best. Yeah. I was just starting out DJing in New York City, and I loved the record. I remember like the emotional element behind it. And I used to close out some of my sets with that record.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. It was like, cause it was a really nice way to like close out the night. I loved it. And, that's how I first heard about you. And then fast forward all these years later, I mean, it's been cool to see your journey as an artist. You started out with remixes of like Maroon 5 and Tove Lo, right? Yeah. And then you put out the Whitney remix, and then you start putting out original stuff, and the collaborations that you've done have grown over the years. I mean, the list is pretty long. I just didn't name a few. Seven Lions, Illenium, BB Rexa, Daya, Gorgon City, which I'm a huge Gorgon City fan.
Yeah, those guys are awesome.
Luna George, Carly Rae Jepsen. Pretty wide range, too. I mean, you purposely tried to do an eclectic mix of music. Is that just like, was that intentional, or do you just kind of get bored with one direction and you want to explore other things?
I don't know if it's necessarily intentional, but I guess I'm always open to working with any person, like regardless of like their style or like who they are as an artist. I just
all right,
feel
cool.
Like,
we're confirming a session with Ryan Sky right now. Thank you.
Oh. Nice. I just feel like I never want to limit myself or pigeonhole myself creatively. And I feel like anytime I'm collaborating with someone that I haven't like been really in that world before, it's such a rewarding experience for me creatively. And it's just like, it's a cool opportunity just to meet people from all different backgrounds and styles and just work together on music. Like, that's my favorite thing to do, is just be in the studio vibing with people making music and being creative. So yeah, it wasn't like intentional or wasn't anything bored. It just excites me to work with different people.
Yeah. It's interesting when I have many guests on the show, and I'll tell people who's going to be on and get varying ranges of reactions. But I have to say that when I mention that you're going to be on the show, the way that people's faces light up, it's pretty special. I don't see that every time when I have guests on the show. You are cultivating a fan base of people that are emotionally attached to the music, and it really, I can see it moves them. Have you seen that over the years? I mean, that must be such a great experience to be making music that you're passionate about, putting out, and then also having people receive it the way they have been.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. I mean, that's honestly probably the greatest, my favorite part of touring is having that connection with fans and people at the shows. And seeing them before the shows, meeting them before and after, like to know how much the music means to them and affects them emotionally. It's very rewarding as an artist that I'm able to do that. And it allows me to like really connect with the fans too on a deeper level. And when I see them out in the shows, like getting teary eyed or even crying to some of the music at the shows, it makes me feel just very like fulfilled.
Well, they could leave it all behind tonight.
Nice one. 2 for 2 right now on this.
I've been making dad jokes since before I was a dad. So
I love a good dad joke. The knee slap.
No. Oh, man. You just opened a can of worms.
Here, yeah, dude. You're screwed now, dude.
All right.
Careful what you wish for, man.
Yo, I wouldn't lie.
Oh, my God.
That's awesome. What? I mean, so... Yeah, touring is that experience that you're talking about, and it's something that you can't really do right now, right? With the pandemic. I mean, what has that been like in terms of like not being able to tour, not being able to connect with fans in that way?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna lie, it's been hard. I just feel like I was touring in Asia and Southeast Asia and India and in like February, and then I was in Europe in early March, and I was like looking at my calendar being like, wow, I like don't have a weekend off until like September. Being like intimidated by it, but also just like looking forward to it so much, like world traveling and being able to see with so many fans. And all of a sudden in like the span of like a week or two, I feel like entire world was turned upside down.
It's nuts. It was, now like, you're talking in Venice.
Yeah. And now I'm just here every day in Venice.
Wow.
Which is like, it's definitely been tough. Like there's certain days where I'm just like really bummed out about stuff, but you know, other days I'm also like really happy with the stuff that I'm making. Cause I essentially like put myself in album 2 creative mode, like 6 to 9 months earlier than I anticipated. But at the same time, it's like, I'm trying to make the most of it, and I'm enjoying being here with my wife and dog, you know, every day. And so that's like a very positive thing, and still trying to stay creative and you know, there are good things that can come of this, I think. So,
yeah, I imagine your wife is happy to have you there every day.
Or, yeah, you know, totally.
Frequently. Yeah.
I've been like gardening in the backyard and front yard now, which is like, I know. I'm like going all in on the.
What kind of garden? Like vegetable gardening?
It's more like flowers. Yeah, it's like more flowers and succulents. And then I'm trying to like make the grass finally like grow nicely in the backyard. We have like an old bungalow house, so like there's no irrigation and stuff in it. It's like very old school, like 1950s Venice. So I'm just like doing all this yard work, trying to make it look nice.
Scott, you've been in quarantine as well with the baby and the wife. Have you been getting into some gardening?
Nope.
You got to do some gardening on your hair. I saw a video of you yesterday.
Oh, yeah. Let me tell you something, Mr. Griffin. My hair has been growing like weeds, and I haven't gotten a cut since early March. So we actually found a barber to come to the house that would cost the same as going there. And so tomorrow I'm going to look probably like I'm in the military.
That's awesome. Yeah. My hair is, I think my hair is as like long as it's ever been actually, cause I haven't cut it for a long time too.
I guess it's kind of fun in a funny way.
Okay. Wow.
Hey, I'm all for the lyric tie-ins. I would love to jump in more about the topic for today. Cause I wanted to talk about the human condition. And the reason why that idea came to me is because I was listening to the song and looking at the lyrics, and, you know, like verse one starts out, time's on your side when you're 6 years young and brave. And so it's starting out with like when you're young and you've got the whole world ahead of you. And the song talks about heartbreak, falling in love, learning lessons from your first love, and kind of like what that experience is like. And then in the chorus, you're saying, You're saying you can cry because your tears are going to dry, giving the person permission to experience the emotions surrounded by being alive, being human, heartbreak and growing up and not knowing things and like trying things and making mistakes. And when I'm reading this, I'm thinking like, this is something we all go through. This is part of the human condition. And I've wanted to talk about this topic. I mean, it's pretty broad, but I would love to dive into it. I always have a quote for each episode. And so this is a quote that I have for today, for the human condition. So the quote goes like this. In a metaphysical sense, the human condition describes the joy, terror, and other feelings or emotions associated with being and existing. Humans are aware of the passage of time. We can remember the past, imagine the future, and we're intimately aware of our own mortality. Only human beings are known to ask ourselves questions related to the purpose of life beyond the basic need for survival. Questions like, what is the meaning of existence? Why was I born? Why am I here? Where will I go when I die? The humans struggle to find answers to these questions, and the very fact that we can conceive them and ask them is what defines the human condition. That's the quote for today.
Wait, Ryan, I have a question.
Yes.
Why am I here?
Man, we're all trying to ask that question. You tell me. No. Why do you think you're here?
To be a good co-host.
Okay. In this moment?
In this moment. I mean, that was meant to be a silly joke, but I'll get really introspective. Why am I here? I think that I personally am here completely randomly because my parents met and had a baby. And my purpose, I guess, is just to have as productive of a life as possible wherein I make meaningful relationships and have really good pizza.
That's really interesting. Okay, so you think it's random. That's kind of like what your experience has been.
I'll go on that.
Why do you think you're here? Do you know like you've experienced so much in your life already. Do you feel like you have an idea of like what your purpose is or where you're going?
I feel like sometimes I do, but sometimes I don't. I mean, I think like in the now, I feel like I have found my like, what's the word? Like vocation. I feel like I've found like what it is that brings me personal joy and personal growth. And that's like being a creative in the music space and being able to like give that to people But like, I don't know what that'll be like 5-10 years from now, if I'll still feel that same way, and still have that fulfillment in it. But at least in the present, that's sort of what I feel like I'm getting the most out of my life by doing this, and feeling like I'm giving back to people, or trying to at least give back to people in that regard, which makes me feel good. But I don't know why I'm here ultimately, but just trying to understand that, this, I am here, and I feel like as human beings, we just try and do the best we can and forge like strong, meaningful connections with other humans. And as we go through life and try and do the best we can.
It's such a crazy experience being alive and not knowing what really why we're here. Like, we're never going to really know and understand. I don't think it's beyond our comprehension. And the best we can do is like make the most of this experience. I don't personally, my experience doesn't feel like maybe that it's random, but I feel that all of our purpose is to, I feel like the purpose of humans is consciousness and the awakening of consciousness. And the more that we exist as a species and we're pushing forward with social issues and with music and creativity and all of these sorts of things, like there's an evolution and a growth that's happening. And I feel like it's our destiny to like keep expanding, and our purpose is to awaken our consciousness. And you kind of like, if you interact with different people, you can see varying levels. Like, we're all at different stages of like, you know, some people call it like frequencies of kind of like how they're operating. You can see some people are more maybe trapped in their thoughts and maybe like patterns that they picked up as kids. And then you see other people that have been able to work through those things, and they're maybe more of like a higher, they're operating at like a higher level. They're more self-aware of their patterns and their thoughts, and maybe they've tapped into their creative selves, and we're kind of like all here to help each other. That's been what my experience is so far. It's about like the growth of consciousness. You had mentioned about your vocation. And when you said that, it reminded me of, there's this Japanese term called ikigai. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
Nope.
I just found out about this a couple weeks ago, and it's really fascinating. I would like to do a show on it. I would want to bring somebody on that really understands it and can talk us through it more. But from what I understand, ikigai, the word ikigai means your reason for being. And the whole idea is like finding your ikigai. It's this chart of these circles that are overlapping. And the whole concept of ikigai is like you want to get to a point where you're the career that is right in the center of this ikigai. And if you do like a search online, you'll see the different areas of the chart. So there's like, you know, part of the ikigai is like what you're good at, something you're good at. Another part is like, something you're interested in, something you can get paid for, something the world needs. And you try to find a career and you had said a vocation where you're good at it, you're getting paid for it, the world needs it. It's making a difference. Like, the more of these boxes you can check off, then the closer in the center of the ikigai that you get, it's like the closer you get to like your life purpose, your reason for being. And I've noticed that the gentleman that was telling me about the ikigai, he was saying that it changes, because you had said maybe 5-10 years, who knows where you'll be, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So the ikigai could change. Like, right now, maybe you're where you're at. You're making music. You have albums coming out, and you're getting paid for it, and people want it, and it's making a difference, and it's fulfilling. And then maybe that it's going to change. Maybe you'll get inspired to go in a different direction in the future.
Yeah. Wow. That's really cool. I'm going to check that out.
Check it out. And also, the other cool thing about ikigai is that it could be. So, okay, I was my Scott. It was Day.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is kind of a funny story. Day and I were tripping on acid.
Yes.
And so he's always telling me, yeah, always. Have you done acid before?
I have.
Yeah. It's fun.
Only once.
Scott?
What up?
I know the answer to this.
No, I'll be straight with you. I love marijuana, but I don't smoke it because my father died of lung cancer. So I do edibles. But as far as psychedelics go, I once did mushrooms accidentally, because they were in a brownie, but I've never done acid.
Have any of you microdosed the mushroom microdosing?
No, I was just talking to someone about that the other day. Have you tried it?
No, but I know a lot of people, like very high functioning, like people that love to microdose and are feel like they're highly like more productive and creative than ever.
I'm very curious.
It's getting so. I feel like I know so many people that are doing it right now.
Are they doing it daily or is it a?
I wouldn't say it's daily, but I feel like maybe like once a week, once every 2 weeks or something, they'll like do it. But
that's really interesting. I've read about. So it's popular in Silicon Valley with programmers and highly functioning people, as you had said. I haven't tried it, but I probably will.
I think I'm going to. Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting to me. So we were tripping on acid, a friend of mine, and he was telling me about the Ikigai. And then we started kind of spitballing on it. And we realized that that concept of Ikigai can apply to different areas of your life. Like, for instance, we were thinking about relationships, like finding a partner that is in your Ikigai of what you're looking for. And then we were talking about maybe, say, like open relationships. And how if you could be, maybe you're in an open relationship. No. Maybe you're in a monogamous relationship and the physical aspect of it may say like 15 years, 20 years go by and you feel unfulfilled. And I've never been in an open relationship, but we were just kind of talking about like, cause I know a lot of people who are in one and they are really happy. They have a lot of trust with their partner and it seems to really work for them. And I even read articles where they've done studies and they've studied people in open relationships and they've studied people in monogamous relationships. And they found that there was a higher level of satisfaction in the open relationships. And my friend and I were talking about this and we thought, well, maybe if we look at the Ikigai concept, if that, say that like physical element starts to feel like it's lacking, it's almost like if you just say you're in your Ikigai, this person is everything you want, but maybe like that you're not feeling as fulfilled anymore physically. Just say hypothetically you were to open that part of the relationship up and you were open. Now it's like that rung of the Ikigai is being fulfilled and this partner is fulfilling all the other things that you're looking for in someone. Conceptually, I could see that working. I mean, I don't know. I've never been in one. I don't know that I ever would be.
Yeah, that's interesting. I guess the only fear would be like if you don't no longer have that physicalness with your main partner, will other things in your relationship start to deteriorate though?
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, I guess
that's hard to know. I mean, you don't really know until I guess you're in that.
From an outside perspective, it's interesting to see someone in an open relationship and see them so happy because then we have our own ideas of what that might be like. But I could also see if you're with somebody and they fulfill everything, but maybe you're not as happy with the physical aspect anymore. I could see how maybe you could open just that part up and not ever really feel tempted to leave your partner or find someone else because they're everything else that you want. And so you're so emotionally bonded to that person that there's like I could see there being no desire leaving. It's like, what's the point? This is everything I want, and I'm getting to fulfill this other element. I mean, as humans, especially as men, we're wired for variety. You know, like it's in our DNA. I mean, we're wired. Women are wired for procreation, and men are wired for variety. And what do you think, Scott?
I think we should take over this in chapter two of our dialogue and keep everyone on bated breath through these Viagra commercials.
How are we on time?
We're good. We're done with one. We're up to
okay. Two. All right. So on that note, let's bring this to a close. We're going to take a short break. When we get back, we're going to have Griffin again, and we're going to be talking about his track "Cry" and some more about the human condition.
And right after, talk about Abbott's Pizza as well. You know, we really like that.
Yeah. Shout out.
Here we go. All right. We'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back to Life Rhythms Radio Show. I'm your host, Ryan Sky. I've got very special guest today, Griffin. Hey, Griffin.
What's up? How you doing?
Doing great, man. Excited to have you on today. Also, I've got my co-host and manager, Scott Waldman. Hey, Scott.
Just to learn a lesson.
Yes. Here we go. We are featuring Griffin's track, Cry. And you just heard a clip of it coming into this segment. emotional dance record. It's looking at the lyrics, we're talking about the human condition today. We mentioned a little bit about this before. Looking at some of the lyrics, we've got like, you can leave it all behind. And verse 2, talking about now you're up in the night, thinking about a call that you never made. You work for a life that you don't want anyway. I something that maybe we could all relate to is this sort of like regrets or second guessing things, or just kind of like evaluating where you're at in your life and thinking about, is this, where have I been? Where am I at? Where am I going? Am I doing everything I can be doing to build the life that I want to build? And it's like the whole thing about being human, we can plan everything that we want to, but it's like you can try to plan it out, but it never goes the way you think. I always feel that everything always works out for the best. Like I always have mantras of like, things are always working out for me. And I tried to plan things out, but I also try to be open because I know that if we try too hard to plan each step, then we also are kind of cutting out the possibilities of what could happen. Yeah. So I want to talk about cry. I want to talk about the human condition. And according to Wikipedia, the human condition is all of the characteristics and key events that compose the essentials of human existence, including birth, growth, emotion, aspiration, conflict, and mortality. Buddhism teaches that life is a perpetual cycle of suffering, death, and rebirth. And we can be liberated from that. And the Christians teach that humans are born in a sinful condition and we're doomed in the afterlife unless we receive the salvation through Jesus Christ. There's like all these different concepts of being alive. And really what it comes down to is just trying to have a story of understanding why we're here. Mm-hmm. If you growing up, were you raised in any particular religion or like, what is your viewpoint of life and death and those sorts of things?
I did not grow up religious. I went to Catholic high school.
I did too.
Ooh, ooh. Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I did not.
You did not?
No.
Jew did not.
Yeah. I wasn't sure whether the audience would germit that, but yeah, I was raised on a life of bagels.
This is a politically correct show.
No, this is a politically correct and extremely liberal show.
but go ahead. You went to a Catholic
high school. I went to a Catholic high school. I wouldn't say I'm personally religious. I'm almost more like spiritual, I feel like. Not so much religious, but yeah, I mean, I think everybody's still trying to figure out why we're really here. I feel like there are so many religions and different beliefs that you may have, but the fundamental thing is people are still always sort of seeking that question, like, why are we here? What is our purpose? I think the good thing about religion is I do think there's always an underlying, not underlying, but there is always a theme of like concept of being a good person, doing like the right thing morally and taking care of one another, being kind to one another. Like I love that about religion. I'm not personally like practicing anything in my life, but I admire, a lot of the fundamental characteristics of all different types of religion.
You went to a Catholic high school. Was that part of your family's experience of being Catholic or?
No, I mean, it was more, I just felt like from an education standpoint, and I was a big sports guy also growing up actually. And so that school just offered a lot of like opportunity for me as an athlete. And then just as a student as well, my parents just thought that was the best fit for me. And I do feel like it was a good fit. I feel like I got a lot out of it. So,
and you say that you're spiritual now, has that changed? Like, for instance, is this kind of like a new thing, or have you always been kind of in the same space? The reason why I ask is my personal journey is I was raised Catholic, and then I fell away from it for a while, where I didn't feel like I believed it anymore because I felt kind of like I didn't feel accepted by the church, and I felt like I just questioned it a lot. Like I had trouble buying into these stories of what 2,000 years old, and so for a while I didn't believe. And then my experience, somebody that I was dating had died, and losing them to suicide actually, that really like woke me up. And at that time I didn't believe in anything, but for me that kind of like triggered something in me, and it ended up being a blessing in disguise because I kind of found my way back to that kind of spiritual dimension. I don't personally, I wouldn't say that I identify with any particular religion, but as you had said, I'm also spiritual.
You're a humanist, right?
What's that?
Wouldn't you say you're a humanist?
I'm not familiar with that term.
Are you Mr. Griffin? Because I will look it up and tell you verbatim what it said.
Yeah, I'm going to have to hear the definition before.
All right. I got you guys. This is normally I'm the dad joke and a chimer in other ways. This is great. All right. Humanism, an outlook or system of thought attaching prime importance to human rather than divine or supernatural matters. Humanist beliefs stress the potential value and goodness of human beings, emphasize common human needs, and seek solely rational ways of solving human problems.
I don't know that I would say I'm a humanist.
Ah.
I don't know if I am fully either. I think there's some aspects of me that believe that, but I do kind of have like a, I don't know if it's like a belief in a higher being, like an individual that's there, but I do feel like there is something beyond, I feel like, our realm of existence and like the way we're connected to like people that I feel like is just beyond totally. I don't know.
That's why organized religion kind of isn't for me, because I feel that I can just pick and choose certain principles from a bunch that I like, as opposed to I'm a Christian, I'm a Jew, I'm a humanist. It's like, no, I like this Buddhist principle. I like this principle. And the dogmatic religions are like, nah, man, all or nothing, bitch.
It's like politics. It's like politics for me.
Yeah.
Same concept.
It is like politics, but fuck Trump and Pence. Anyway, thank you.
There was a spiritual teaching I came across over the past couple of years that really resonated with me. And the idea of it was kind of thinking about our experiences. Like if humankind was like really actually all living things is like the ocean, like an ocean. And then you've got little waves that come up on the surface. And the spiritual teaching said something of the sort of like, we are all, rather than thinking of us all separate from each other, to think about us all as like we're all the ocean, and each one of us are these little waves that kind of are popping up on the surface. And for a brief moment in time, we each have our own individual wave that's like up, and it's like we're living our life, blah, and then we're gone, right? And then we're like back into the ocean. And the cool thing was like under that surface of all these little waves of people, you've got the deep, deep, deep ocean under us that connects us all together. And that really resonated with me. It helped me kind of understand that idea of us being connected, but also kind of having a little bit of individuality that we experience, you know?
Right. Yeah, I like that.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know that I'm a humanist, but that's been my experience. So let's dive back into the track. So your first full-length album, Gravity, debuted at number 3 on Billboard's top dance and electronic albums charts November 2nd. That must have been so thrilling.
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, I always, like when I first started making music, I just did remixes like for free. I was just like uploading them to SoundCloud. Just honestly, at that time, I was studying electrical engineering at college, thinking in no way I was going to be like a musician. You know, I grew up playing piano and guitar, but I just.
At USC, right?
Yeah. But I just did. That was not like in my head of where I was going with my life. And my goal was just maybe I'll make music that my friends will play at like apartment parties in college or whatever. It just sort of like grew online, and all of a sudden labels started hitting me up being like, hey, will you remix Maroon 5? Will you remix this Ellie Goulding record? And all of a sudden I'm just like, oh, wow, cool. Like do some other work like that. And then people started asking me if I wanted to play and do shows. I was like, whoa, what? Like this is actually like, there's like money here and like a potential like sustainable career out of this. And then from there it just like evolved to like, all right, well, now what do I want to say as an artist outside of just remixing other people's work? And like what do I want to convey as an artist? What do I want to be about? And that was sort of like, now I feel like now that I put out Gravity, my first like album, I feel like I'm so much more involved as an artist from where I started back in the day as a remixer. So that was a huge like really big accomplishment for me to put out Gravity.
You're a multi-instrumentalist. You grew up classically trained pianist and also played guitar at an early age. You played in bands, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was doing like jamming around with friends and stuff. Nothing like serious, but you know, the classic setting it up in the garage, messing around, trying to write tracks that were probably all terrible back then. But
yeah,
it was fun.
You were a Beatles fan as a kid.
Yeah, I mean, I was a big classic rock fan in general. Yeah, I did love the Beatles. Like, my parents would always play their records.
Well, speaking of classic rock, but for the record, the Beatles are the best band of all time. But you have something in common with Tom Scholz from the band Boston, that he went to MIT and got his mechanical engineering and then joined a band called Boston, which has sold more records than pretty much anyone.
Wow, that's cool.
Yep.
I didn't know that.
Yep. He produced it, but basically he used his mechanical engineering skills from a little school called MIT to pretty much invent a style of production in the mid-70s.
That's pretty cool. You were in college studying and the music kind of took off organically. And when I listen to the original music that you've put out, it is very emotional and it really does touch chord within the listeners. And then I hear about you growing up as a Beatles fan. I'm wondering, like, is music kind of, is it therapeutic for you? Are you able to kind of put things into the music that maybe might not come naturally to you in terms of like talking and sharing outside of that?
Wow, that's actually pretty, I've never thought about it like that, but you actually might be right, because I personally, like we were talking about before on the air, but I have a hard time like sharing and communicating with even my like family or my wife and stuff at times, because I'm not like good at just conversing and opening up, I guess. But
yeah,
when it comes to like music and the emotions that I have inside me, I can really get them out with music. Like, music is almost like my outlet for letting my emotions out and being vulnerable, I guess. Because I get really emotional when I make the music and when I'm writing it.
What is that like for you, getting emotional making it? Is it feel like a release to you?
Yeah, it does. It's like, it's very, I feel like exhausted, but very like almost like relieved, and like that something is like stress and frustration or anything that I'm feeling kind of like gets out that way. And it's very
therapeutic.
Like, yeah. It's almost like my therapy.
It is for me. I, before I sold out and became a manager, I was a full-time musician, and I can tell you that writing a song, letting it all out on paper, and then coming up with a melody for it truly helped me deal with certain traumatic situations.
Yeah, same here. And the process of making the song and then being able to listen to it back is also therapeutic for me, because it's like, as I'm listening to it, it's helping me process what my experience was with whatever that song was about. And I kind of feel like a calming sense, like it helps relieve me. And it's like, it's kind of a way to like, for the mind to process things.
You channeled something negative and turned it into something positive that could potentially help someone else.
There's a documentary. I don't know if I mentioned this on a previous episode before, but there's a documentary called My Beautiful Broken Mind. And I'm just thinking of this all of a sudden, because the idea is, so that it's, you know, it's a true story. It's a documentary. So the woman, she's in her 30s.
And you have mentioned this, by the way, on the show.
Mentioned this?
Yeah,
okay.
Shout out, though. That's great.
Well, I'm going to mention it again, because it's, I think Griffin might find this interesting. But so she had, she was a filmmaker. And she, this is a true story. She experienced a stroke and a damaged part of her brain. The way it affected her, she's no longer able to store memories. So here's somebody who's like a brilliant storyteller. And now all of a sudden you have a stroke and you're no longer able to express yourself and communicate the same way. A, and B, you can't even comprehend what's happened to you, because your mind is not functioning enough to really understand like the whole journey of what you've experienced. And also, she experienced learning issues and visually, like half of her visual spectrum was distorted, kind of like she was tripping on, like the right side of her visual field is like you're tripping on acid, right? And then the left side is normal. But she's just like walking around every day now. It's just the way her brain has been affected. And so she reaches out to David Lynch, famous filmmaker, who's known for this like noir style of filmmaking. And she reaches out to him and she's like, David, like I feel like I am living in a David Lynch movie. I think you'd be really fascinated to learn about what my experience has been. And so David, he finances this entire documentary that chronicles her journey of trying to recover. And then also it has all of these ideas of like her brain is changed now. So it's like, she's no longer the person she was. So it's like, are we our brain or are we something beyond the brain? And if the brain gets damaged, are we damaged as a person? And what I thought, what the reason why I'm bringing this up is because what I thought was really cool was at the end, they show you that kind of like the purpose of the documentary was so she could watch the documentary back and be able to see her story and actually comprehend what she's been through and where she's gone. And without the process of creating a film and documenting it, putting into a story, she would never be able to experience this. And when I was just saying about like creating a song and then listening it back and how it helps me process, I thought, oh, that's what she's experienced too. She, you know, they were able to make this movie and then she can listen to it back. And it's a sort of like therapy of like being able to understand who you are and kind of like put it into context.
Wow. That is crazy.
I think it was the Kaiza episode, Ryan, that we talked
about. Yeah, it was
her accident.
Yeah. Cause she had a brain injury. That's right. It was a Kaiza episode. Yep. So it's called My Beautiful Broken Mind.
Wow. I'm going to check that out.
And you're my beautiful broken friend, Ryan. So I'm glad.
Oh, Scott.
It's cute, guys.
Yeah. This is so fun. So yeah. Okay. So we're talking about the process of writing. We're talking about how it's been therapeutic for you. Multi-instrumentalist. Is that run in the family? First of all, do you have any siblings? I'm curious.
I have an older sister. She took piano lessons when we were growing up. No, my parents are not musical at all. Well, my mom can like hold a pitch, but my dad no musicality whatsoever. I have some cousins that are actually musical. Like one of my second cousins on my dad's side, who we used to spend a lot of time with growing up, he was in like a pretty prominent Orange County like punk hardcore band.
You're speaking my language. What band?
Thrice.
Yeah. Wait. Who?
Dustin Kenzeru, the singer.
And his brother was in I, Alaska.
Yeah, Chase. Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Yeah. I used to grow up. I used to like go down to Orange County and watch them perform whenever they came up to San Francisco. I'd go watch them perform and stuff. And yeah, I got to see his whole career sort of explode when I was like a young kid, which was always really cool.
Ryan, Thrice is kind of like the Warped Tour World's version of Radiohead in that like they completely changed genre a lot of albums, but like they would be a main stage Warped Tour band. They're huge.
Yeah. Yeah. It's cool. I'm actually hopping on I'm going to do a interview podcast with him eventually too. He reached out to me the other day, but yeah, there. So I guess the music is, it's kind of been in my life, like through like more distant relatives, but in my immediate family, like my parents definitely not musical. But.
You started out with piano or guitar?
Piano. Yeah. I started playing when I was 7.
And how did that come about? Were you exposed to it in some sort of way, or did your parents?
I think my parents just wanted me to, like, I feel like sometimes parents are just like, they like to get their kids to do piano lessons. It's like something to do and like, you know, like a way to like expand their mind as they're developing and whatnot, I guess. But yeah, I just took to it. I really liked it when I was a kid and I got pretty good at classical music actually. And I played all the way through like recitals and Certificate of Merit was like a yearly exam where I had to play several pieces in front of like an evaluator and whatnot and did all
when
that.
You're 6 years young and brave.
When I was 6 years young and brave.
What were you like as a kid? Were you like outgoing? Were you shy and quiet? Or
were you curious? An emo 6 year old? Like, were you into Thrice?
I liked Thrice. I wasn't like the kid that wore like the tight emo jeans and like had that whole vibe, but I was really into their music and really into that scene in general. I also grew up playing like sports. I was kind of had my hand in like a lot of different stuff, to be honest, kind of like a hodgepodge of different stuff. I mean, I would say I was somewhat outgoing. I'm not like the guy that's going to dominate a conversation in like a room, but like I do partake and whatnot. But I'm kind of like in the middle, I guess.
Are you kind of like the observant type? Are you because I'm like that. I don't know. I'm kind of like, it's weird. I kind of feel like I'm either like a shy extrovert or I'm like, I don't know, or I'm an outgoing introvert. It's very weird because I tend to get quiet in big public settings and I tend to more like, I'm very, very observant and I pick up on a lot of things. And I kind of like to, I have like a very active internal world going on. And I just kind of like, sometimes I get into my head and I have to like try to like snap out of it and be more like engaging with people. I mean, like on the show, you know, I'm the host and stuff, and I've got this thing that I do, but in terms of like public settings or when I'm out, like I sometimes I can retreat into myself.
I'm actually very similar in that regard. Cause I'll like, when we're talking, you know, in this setting, it's fine. Cause it's, you know, just the three of us here, and in any like setting like that, it's fine. But I actually, sometimes if I'm having to like, I don't know, talk in front of the label and a bunch of people, or even like meet and greets, or like even just the concept of being on stage sometimes and being in front of all these people that are like watching me and watching the show, I can get like a little bit in my head and uncomfortable with it at times. And I have to kind of like shake, like snap out of it and be like, okay, this is like, this is the life you chose, is to be a performer. Yeah. But sometimes it's actually like, it gives me sometimes anxiety and I feel a little bit like nervous about it.
And then it gets deeper.
Do you have any sort of exercises that you do to kind of work through the anxiety?
I mean, I definitely like try and exercise pretty often, just to kind of like, I don't know, expend that sort of like energy or any like frustration or like pent up feelings. It kind of helps me with that. And every time, like before I get on stage, I'm like I take everybody out of the green room that's like not immediately a part of the show, and just do a lot of like deep breathing, like kind of like not full on meditating, but definitely like trying to take slow deep breaths, calm myself before I like go full send out there on stage and stuff. I try and be like as zen as possible.
What was the first massive show you did? You remember?
I think it was the first time I played Coachella was like the first moment where I'm like peeking out like at through the LED walls and looking at the crowd, seeing like 15,000 people there. It was just like, honestly, that whole experience was like a blur. I like look back on the videos of it and be like, wow, that actually happened, because it was like, it was almost like a blackout for like an hour, that whole experience.
You know what I do if that happened to me?
What's that?
Cry.
It's okay to cry.
And believe it or not, we have to wrap this up, but I just have one very important question for you.
Yeah.
Is your favorite Beatles song A Day in the Life?
I think that's it's on my favorite album.
Well, Sgt. Pepper's dope. I'd say that's like my third favorite album, but I'd say it's a tie between A Day in the Life and Help.
Help is an amazing.
Which one's your favorite? Do you have one?
Revolution 9.
A Day in the Life actually is a very, very cool song. Like the full blown journey that record is.
Yep.
What's the one that co-signed that?
Good.
Co-sign that?
Yeah.
Rufus Wainwright did a cover. That's one of my favorites. I forget the name of it. It's like da 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 da.
That's Across the Universe, dude.
Yeah, Across the Universe. That one's, I really like that.
By the way, I'm a huge Beatles fan. Anyway, but this was fun. I learned a little bit, and I made a few dad jokes.
Sounds successful to me.
Damn right.
There are some good dad jokes in there.
Thank you. I get your approval. I made it.
We got the lyric tie-ins, you know.
Yeah.
Griffin, so great having you on the show today. Thanks for joining us. Life for them.
Thanks so much for having me. It was awesome. I had a great time.
Can you give your socials out for the listeners?
Yeah, it's just at Griffin Official, pretty much across the board. Even on TikTok now, you can find me.
Ooh, are you making videos?
Get everywhere. You know what? I kind of am with quarantine. I actually get TikTok now. I was kind of like a TikTok hater for a while.
Same here.
It's because I feel like I didn't want to adapt. But yes. I get why people love it. I understand it now. It's fun. It's actually fun.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing these videos.
Yeah, I got some coming.
Okay. All right. So Griffin Official, or Official Griffin?
Griffin Official
on socials. Listeners, check out the single Cry featuring John Martin. We've got the album Gravity. There's more music coming out in the future. Check them all out. It's been such a pleasure having you on the show. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Cool. Until next time, thanks for checking out Life Rhythms Radio Show.